This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
And welcome to Any Stupid Questions, the podcast where we haven't had enough of experts, but in about half an hour, an expert will have had enough of us. I'm Carrie Quinlan, sitting in for Danielle Ward, who can't be here because she's with Idris Elba. Joining me to explain banking is the personal finance editor of the Financial Times, Claire Barrett. Hello.
Hi.
And I'm also joined by comedians Olivia Lee and Gareth Gwynne. Hello.
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 Hi.
Now, no one listens to the end of podcasts for things you want to plug, so I'm going to give you 5 seconds to plug something now. No more than five or people will get bored. So, Olivia, plug something, please.
My podcast on Radio Ha Ha, called Frank, which launches on Valentine's Day.
Gareth.
I have recently presented an archive on 4 on BBC Radio 4.
Ooh.
Called Gareth Gwynne's Alternative Archive. It's on BBC Sounds right now.
Claire, would you like to plug something?
Yes, I present the FT Money Show, which is the FT's weekly podcast about personal finance every week, where we try really hard to make personal finance accessible for people who don't like doing it.
So, right, let's get straight into it. First question. Claire, why shouldn't I withdraw all my money from Nationwide and put it with the tinned goods and toilet paper that I'm stockpiling for Brexit?
The instinct to put cash under the mattress and take it out of the bank. Now, when have we seen this happen before recently? Northern Rock, 2008. The run on the bank. People panic because they knew that there was something wrong within the financial system. Turns out they were right. And naturally, everyone thinks, I must get hold of my money, take it out of the bank. But that creates huge problems for the entire banking system because the money that's in bank accounts, like we can see it on our phones or on our statements or whatever, but it's not all physically there. The bank doesn't have to keep all of it. It's quite a difficult concept for people to get their heads around. But what it does mean is that if everybody took all of their money out of the bank all at the same time, then we wouldn't have a financial system. So that would obviously be quite bad because then things like credit wouldn't exist. We wouldn't be able to apply for a mortgage or get a credit card or buy now, pay later. So all of those kinds of things are connected to a bank judging on your risk and ability to pay back a sum of money in the future, which is why they're lending out the money that they have. Now, if you're worried about what will happen to your money if we do see things get quite sticky during the Brexit process, be reassured that all of the UK banks through the Financial Services Compensation Scheme mean that your deposits are protected per bank up to £85,000. So if you've got
Wait, sorry, I'm going to have to make a call.
This is a big problem. Although, if you're older, you know, you've got retirement savings, do watch out because there's been so many mergers and acquisitions between the banking groups since 2008 where several of them went wrong. For example, RBS and NatWest did the same thing. That's the same bank.
So that's 85,000 across.
Exactly.
Two.
Also, right. People like M&S Bank, Marks and Spencer's, lots of people have got an account with them.
Trustworthy, get, M&S.
And also vouchers.
You get discounts.
Yeah, exactly. But they are operated by HSBC. And so if you've also got money with HSBC, then if in the unlikely event, she says, that the banking system would collapse, you'd only be able to get one lot of £85,000 back. And not
but I want my other £85,000.
What happens to the rest of it? It's just, sorry, it's gone.
The amount actually goes up and down. A while ago, it was £80,000. But because of the shift in the euro, because this is European regulation that's given this protection to us, they had to move the protection up because sterling had fallen in value. And Paul Lewis from Moneybox actually campaigned for that, which I thought was very clever.
So you can split them. So I can put £84,999 in one bank,
yep,
and £84,999 in another bank, and yep, they're both safe.
And £84,999.
Well, of course we will. I have a question. How many people actually have that in savings? Is that quite a common thing, or what's the average amount that people have as a saving?
That's
roughly
a great question.
It's a good question. I can give you some insight into that. I would say a very small percentage of the UK population has wealth of that amount, based on things like the ONS Wealth and Assets Survey. The ONS, Office for National Statistics, keeps a record, which it's been doing since 1963, of the average household savings rate, like how much of the money that's coming into the household through all the people who work is actually saved rather than going straight out the door. And the rate today is the lowest it has ever been since they started this survey back in the 1960s. Now, that could be because interest rates on savings accounts are really terrible for the last 10 years since the financial crisis. Obviously,
but
interest rates have been really low.
More money because interest rates are low on mortgages, so then wouldn't that
exactly
mean that?
So if you've got assets like a property or like shares in the stock market, woof woof woof, that's gone up. So
woof,
it's people
woof, woof, darling.
it's the people who had fewer assets to start with, i.e. they didn't own their own property and they didn't have stocks and shares or a pension, who have been really screwed by the financial crisis. Because those of us that did have seen the value of those assets inflate, those of us who didn't, which includes obviously lots of younger people, have seen the value of anything that they want to buy, like, you know, a shoebox-sized flat in London, just spiral completely out of their reach. But the question that you originally asked was how many people have got £85,000 in a bank account. I was struck by very interesting statistics from Goldman Sachs, who are trying to break into the UK retail banking scene. They've opened this new internet bank account called Marcus, which pays pretty much the top rate of interest on what they call an easy access savings account, where you can take your money in and out straight away. They're offering 1.5%. They will accept deposits up to £250,000. So
fine.
Obviously, if you
protect £85,000,
let's all apply at once. You're only protected up to that level. That's true. But there was a really frightening statistic about the average balance that people had put into these accounts, just because people had thought, right, great, we'll put all of our spare cash in there. And it was tens of thousands of pounds was the average balance. So there are people with large amounts of cash savings sitting around, and it may well be because, like the rest of us, they might not be stockpiling, but they might be thinking, if things go a bit awry in the next couple of months, maybe the stock market falls, maybe I'll need money to quickly do something. Maybe if they work in the City of London, they're worried about losing their jobs. Lots of people are, and lots of big institutions are shipping their bankers out to Europe and America.
Right, so they're making it easy access, basically,
yeah,
so they can just grab it.
Grab your cash, grab it and leg it.
Yeah. Wow.
That was Ken Dodd's excuse.
Gareth.
There's cash money, and then there's electronic money.
Yeah.
How much money is real and how much is CGI? Like, how much in the economy, how much can I get hold of in terms of, like, paper money, and how much is just numbers on a computer screen zipping around?
Well, much, much more of it is numbers on a computer screen zipping around. The banks would call it the settlement system. So basically, whenever I am using my contactless cards, like, you know, for example, walk into a coffee shop to pay for this coffee, no actual real money is changing hands. I am making a tap, which is electronically linked to me, and it's a promise to pay. It's all predicated on what's written on the back of any £5 or £10 note you might have stuffed under your mattress or otherwise. I promise to pay the bearer on demand, because even the actual cash, you can exchange it for goods and services that are worth up to a certain value or denomination. But is the money itself actually real in the same way that gold, for example, say, is real? And obviously you can forge banknotes and things like that. So it doesn't take a great leap of the imagination to kind of get your head around all of these digital transactions that are coming, and it takes a couple of days for them to be settled, as my youngest stepson found out recently when he was spending lots of money on his contactless card, thinking, oh, it will show up on my banking app and I won't go overdrawn. And then, you know, hello, a few days later, he gets a charge for going overdrawn because it had taken 2 or 3 days for all of those transactions to come in. Well, I taught him quite a lot after that occurred. And I made him march down to his bank and demand that they refund his overdraft fees, because he put up the argument, well, how was I to know that it would take a few days for these kinds of things to show up?
Did that work?
He did get the money back.
Oh, brilliant. And so all we've got to do is march in and demand.
Is it the marching that's the key thing?
Yeah. Yes. No, you've got to
march. Did he march in with you?
Yeah.
And did you tell them who you were, though? Because my mum's a housewife. Housewife mother says.
No, but we did do a role play before he went to do it, because I said, you know, the lady
in
the bank...
Were you an orc?
It's basically going to say, no, you can't have any money next. And he did drama when he was a kid, so he enjoyed this. But it's like a real life situation that can occur to anyone. And unless you kind of feel enraged enough about being ripped off, whether it's by something rubbish that you've bought from a retailer that's gone wrong, or something you've ordered online which doesn't look like it is, which is basically everything that you that you order online, you know, you do have rights as a consumer. You can engage with brands quite effectively through their social media channels and say, I've got a problem and something's,
I always out something's people gone on Twitter wrong. Always. Or brands always out, and then you get action immediately.
But marching in a confident way with a firm voice can be very effective, but never ever be rude to the person that you're speaking to, because they're just a cog in the machine,
yes,
like we all are, and you need to make them feel sorry for you and want to help you and be clear and explain things. So you need to get them on your side.
So given that on banknotes and stuff it says, I promise to pay the bearer, that means that all money is imaginary. Can we imagine it better?
or imagine that more of it belongs to us.
Or imagine it more equally spread.
Well, certainly that's what the central banks, which is basically the name for the bits of the banking system which world governments control, did after the financial crisis.
So is that quantitative easing? Is just imagining more money?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. They added a load of zeros in the simplest sense, made a lot of extra capital, which could act as a cushion. They bought the bad assets from the bad banks. People like to talk about, you know, good money and bad money. Whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, I believe if they hadn't all acted in concert and done that, then the outcome of what would have happened probably would have been much worse for everyone. But that doesn't stop me from wrestling with the massive injustice that we were talking about earlier, with poorer people being much worse off since the crisis.
Mm. When you talk about imagining more money, I've been trying to do what Noel Edmonds does, cosmic order money, and like manifest it and then bring it into existence. Why doesn't that work?
Well, I think it can work in some ways, because if you don't think about your money, and let's use another horrible word, be mindful about your money and the choices that you're making, it is just going to disappear. So I do a lot of finance talks and stuff, and people often say to me, oh, you know, by the end of the month I'm overdrawn, I've run out of money, where does it all go? Am I getting sympathy around the table? You have this kind of problem. And it's never been easier with the advent of all of these digital banking services to find out exactly where your money is going. Now, the old-fashioned way is that you would sit down, like my mum and dad did, as I observed when I was growing up, because it's their fault that I'm a personal finance journalist, because they didn't have any money, so they had to be really good at this stuff. And they would go through with a ruler and pen, line by line, everything that was on their bank statement, everything that was on their credit card statement, and sort of like reconcile it and be like, yes. And my mum used to take cash out of the cash point at the beginning of the month and have like 4 envelopes which she used to put in different cookery books, which I was like aware of but never stole from. I just wanted to know her system.
I think having cash is a better system, because I haven't had cash on me since about 2015.
Yeah.
Everything is done on a card, and I think because of that you're less mindful of what you're spending.
I completely agree with you, and it's harder to keep a track of, especially with the little delays that can creep into the system. So what my mum did was she had like the cash for week one, and when that was spent, you know, that was it. And then it was cash for week two. So that was how they kind of like restricted their budget.
So but that's, nowadays, I need to buy some cookbooks then.
On a...
An envelope, basically. With cash.
On a smartphone now, you can, with various different Challenger Bank accounts, you can set up limits and say, I only want to spend, say, £200 on groceries this month, or £300 on eating out, or £50 on coffee. And the digital banking system, it can tell what you're spending on your card, which category it falls into. So you don't need to do any kind of like complicated spreadsheet. It does it all for you, because the banks have got so much data about what we're buying now because of contactless. They've actually got a bit of a problem, because when they send out statements through the post, they're twice as long roughly now as they were a few years ago, because now every single, you know, 50p in a pound that we spend on contactless is documented in a line.
Whereas what's the point of cash then?
We might have taken 50 quid out and spent it on all kinds of things, but now there's like this worrying level of kind of visibility, and that they can see everything.
I put 45p on a contactless card yesterday and felt really guilty, but it was in Tesco, so I felt okay about it.
Okay, this is something that's only just dawned on me. Is there anything potentially sinister in the fact that now literally every Cadbury's cream egg I buy, the bank knows? Like you said, the detail on my bank statement is so great.
Oh, yeah. Is it? Just, are they watching us?
It's just dawned on me that, there's... That's a lot of data
to
the bank.
To try and buy another cream egg, and Tesco is going to go, no.
That is
you've
plenty.
Had your fill this month.
You've had enough, my friend.
It's not even Lent yet.
Oh, it's him again.
It does worry me. It worries me as a journalist and as a consumer. You're going into Tesco and you're buying your cream egg, and I'm imagining, I haven't bought a cream egg for a while.
Though,
I don't know, how much do they cost now? £1.29 or something ridiculous?
50p.
Okay, so 50p. There's probably a lot of other things in Tesco that also cost 50p.
Right.
So the bank can see that you're spending a little bit of money in Tesco, but they can't see yet.
She
says nervously what they're spending it on, but Tesco can see. If you've got a club card, not that you'd get points on a 50p purchase because it has to be over a pound. But
so are you saying to take my cream egg purchasing off grid?
Yes.
Or at least buy two cream eggs so you can get the club card points.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, or a birthday card so they might think that you were buying them as a gift.
As a gift.
For someone else.
Do you know what frightens me though? I remember I used to have to buy a travel card, or you'd put money on your Oyster and you knew what you were spending on the tube. Mm. And now I use my bank card. Mm. I have no idea what it costs me anymore to get around on public transport, because it all goes on my bank card, and I see TfL come up on my statement. I'm like, £8. I don't know what journey that was, where it was.
Also,
they could literally be charging you through the roof. You wouldn't know.
They have got millions of pounds, TfL, worth of fare overcharge people, because people don't know that they can link their contactless card to their TfL Oyster account, and then you get an automatic notification, and in some cases an automatic refund if you've had a delayed journey or if you haven't touched out properly. And I go and check mine every couple of months,
because
normally I have to do an expenses claim and say, you know, I've come here, I've gone there, I've done this. And you can see very easily on that when they have charged you for, I think it's like something ridiculous, like 10 or 11 quid if you don't tap out properly when you leave a station, and if it's really crowded.
I have no
it's
idea
it's really easy to do that. So they've got all of this
so
cash.
We shouldn't be using our bank cards, really.
Well, use them because it's useful. I tell you what people really shouldn't use, though, particularly in Liverpool Street Station around 8 a.m. when I go through it most days, is the bloody iPhone Apple Pay thing, because it just causes enormous queues, because it takes about 5 seconds for it to work, and everyone's just in the queue thinking, yeah, you and your smart Apple Pay on your phone, you know, the rest of us standing
I'm still impressed by a smartphone. No one needs to show one of them off now.
Yeah.
I'm more impressed if someone's got an old Nokia. I'm
always.
Like, that's...
Yeah, or
like
an A to Z.
Yeah.
Or the wizard man. I've seen him. The thing that makes it work, he put in the tip of a wand so he can go up to the Oyster reader and go, Halakazam, and it lets him through.
If you're enjoying Any Stupid Questions, you could always leave a review somewhere and tell other people about it. 5 stars would be nice, but feel free to give it 1 star if you went to school with Danielle and didn't get on.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
We mentioned challenger banks, and I'm slightly fascinated by them. Are they the future, and can I start one?
Well, it is easier than ever before to get a banking licence, which is what you need to get from the Financial Conduct Authority.
Why is that?
Because they want to encourage more competition into the market. So I've tried to be fact-light for your podcast. I don't want to scare people. But you are more likely to get divorced than change bank account. So I'm going to ask everyone around the table, are you still with the same bank that you signed up to when you were at university, probably to get the free young person's rail card?
Is this a phishing scam? Because this sounds like the sort of thing that in 3 questions time you're going to ask me what my mother's maiden name is.
Are you Nigerian royalty by any chance?
But yeah, I am still with the bank that I set up when I was 17.
I am,
but it's changed names. It used to be Abbey. God, that's how old
Santander.
I am. Yeah, now it's Santander.
I've moved loads.
Well done.
Yeah. I remember somewhere this years ago.
Yeah. You're better at money than you think.
Is that because it's rates or something?
It's partly rates, it's partly ethics, it's partly I really like.
You like a new card?
So this is at my proper bank's bugbear, right? When I was 8, I opened a NatWest account.
For the pig?
For the pigs. I got all the pigs. Why don't I get anything anywhere near as good as the pigs now that I'm in my 40s?
Have you still got the pigs? Because they're worth a fortune on eBay.
I have still got the pigs. Maxwell got smashed.
Oh!
Yeah.
He's easy to replace, though.
And my mum did stick him back together. I was like 20.
How much could she get
really
for the
upset.
Pigs?
Oh, I'd have to Google it. But, you know, hundreds of pounds. If you've got, I think there were five.
Up being the best piece of financial advice you get today. Yeah. I'm furious.
The thing is, I'm never going to sell them. They're the crowning achievement of my life.
It's
this
like
is not the first podcast
like
I've mentioned
Beano annuals. Like, that's the pension.
The best banking freebie that you can get is still the young person's rail card for students who are opening an account.
It's all for young people.
And they share the love. A different one will get it all the time. But the challenger banks, are they the future?
I would say
yes, because they're giving customers what they want and quickly in a way that the banks who are shackled by all of these pretty ancient IT systems through different mergers and acquisitions have all been cobbled together, you know, with bits of wire and sellotape we can butt around. If we think back to TSB, one of the biggest online banking outages ever, some say the biggest that we've ever seen, that caused such a hideous problem, not just for customers who couldn't access their accounts, but who were predated on by fraudsters, just because the bank didn't handle the situation at all well. People were therefore taking advantage, phoning up saying, oh, we're calling from the TSB fraud department, you need to move your money to another account, there's been this big problem online, you know. And they use enough information about something that's real, that it's got enough of the grain of truth about it to trick people into doing that. Now TSB's had to pay out, you know, over 100 million pounds so far in compensation to customers, and that is great, but this is very much kind of old banking, if you like. And new banking, digital banking, the challenger banks, they're so desperate to attract us as customers, because it's really hard to get British people to change their bank account. They're offering really quite amazing perks. Now, if you go on holiday abroad, then the biggest one is that you'll be able to spend money on your card abroad very cheaply, because a lot of people don't know that if you just spend your contactless, keep going on plastic while you're in Europe or America, your bank on average will charge you around 2.5% or 3% of whatever you spend on top as a currency conversion fee, which if you think, if you're paying a £1,000 hotel bill on your card, that's an extra £30 bunged on top, which you only find out about once you get home and look at your bank statement. Whereas if you'd paid that on a Monzo, a Starling, a Revolut's, whatever other cards are available, you're saving an awful lot of money. So that is a great perk for people, like the budgeting tools that you can get, especially for younger customers. This is all new ways that we can use our data more effectively. But what worries me slightly, as I was saying, is that the banks also get an awful lot of access to our data. Now, if you're happy with that, you might say, well, it's a fair transaction. I can get back these goods and services. Cashback is another thing that they offer. I can never be faffed with all the cashback offers. There are some people who are like slaves to these things. I just haven't got time for that. You might think it's a fair transaction, but certainly they're able to do things faster, quicker, in many cases better than the old banks. For example, card replacement pretty much instantly the next day if you lose your card. Lots of the banks are copying the innovations, like Barclays, for example, will now let you turn off your card from the app if you think you've lost it. Does that happen a lot?
That is quite handy, isn't it?
Because I've cancelled cards before and then I've found them like in my laptop because I've bought something online and then I've shut the laptop.
Just going back to the question about student bank accounts.
Yeah.
How common is that then, to get a student bank account at like 17, 18 and then stay with it until you're 65 or whatever? Is that
more common than not, I would say, because the banks,
a bad thing.
The banks are well, the banks are investing an awful lot of money in getting the student market, because they know that you'll be tied to them for a long time, because obviously, you know, they give you the rail card, so that costs them like £40 or whatever. But they also give you a free overdraft, which is like the crack cocaine of the banking world. How can you not use this if it's free? But then after you've graduated, they normally give you a grace period of about 1 year, although I am aware of some of my followers on social media who said that they managed to get away with like 6 or 7 years before the bank realised that they were no longer a student.
Hello. House, didn't get the letter, stayed on a student account for way too long. Can I say this part? I literally don't know if
it's... Are you still on it?
No, but they did. I can't remember.
They caught up
when.
With you eventually.
They definitely caught up with me, yeah.
But at some point, they'll transfer you normally to a graduate account.
They were very disappointed I didn't have a PhD.
And then they'll start charging you a lot of interest on the overdraft, and then you've got to work very hard to, you know, pay that off. So that you can see the kind of the pattern of how they gradually draw you in. And people are also really worried that if they switch bank account, like their money will get lost, or that they'll be left high and dry without a card, which, like, when all of these big like Visa outages and TSB problems have happened, it is quite scary when you think, oh, I haven't actually got any cash. How am I going to
Because I don't think people carry cash on them.
No, I don't anymore. It's terrifying. The only time I really feel it is when someone homeless asked me for money and I haven't, and I can't.
Yeah.
Because that presumably is becoming a big problem.
If you've got a banana on you or something like that.
That's true.
I did give a homeless man a banana the other day. I didn't have any cash on me and I had a banana in my bag and I was like, I want to give you something. It was a freezing cold night. So
it's
I gave him the banana.
Of potassium.
I mean, it's better than nothing.
If we're talking ethics, are banks getting more or less ethical? Has that shifted in the last 10 years?
I think that they are getting more ethical, but I think the reasons why they're getting more ethical is because the city regulators and also campaigners are getting much tougher in policing some of their more nefarious activities. So should we start with PPI? Payment Protection Insurance. I mean, this really was the biggest financial scandal. So it went on for years and years. When people were taking out a loan or some kind of credit product, they were having the insurance in case they lost their job and couldn't pay the loan back tapped onto it. But in most cases, the insurance would never have paid out, particularly if they were like self-employed or anyway, myriad reasons. So the bill for PPI compensation is now like well over £10 billion in terms of what the banks have had to pay out. The FT did a story about 7 or 8 years ago, not long after I joined, about how it was causing a boom in consumer spending because the amounts of money that people are getting back for bad PPI, you know, can easily be thousands and thousands of pounds. So, like, they would just kind of go out and buy a new car. You know, you can make, like, a big investment purchase with that amount of money coming in. So they've set a deadline now of August where you have to get your claims in by. So anyone listening who thinks they might have had it on a mortgage or on a credit card, you know, get hunting. Have a clear-up of all of your old paperwork. Could save you a lot of money. But so there was that big scandal. But then the more recent scandals have been overdrafts, and which the consumer group have been really, really good. I'm massive fans of which, about naming and shaming banks who actually charge more than payday lenders on overdraft charges, especially for unauthorised overdrafts when you go into the red for a few pounds for a few days. Yeah, so, you know, championship medal to which. And the thing that they're currently engaged in a big battle in, which I write a lot about at the FT, is this thing called authorised push payment fraud, which sounds like, doesn't sound like fraud, does it? Oh, it's authorised. That's because that's the name that the banks have given it. This is when a fraudster either sends you a text or phones you up and pretends to be your bank and says, I'm afraid that there's been a problem and it's been accessed by a criminal. But if you move your money to this account, also with Santander, then it will be safe. So we're going to text you a one-time passcode and you just need to read it out to me over the phone. And in the meantime, they've hacked into your internet bank. And as soon as you give them the code...
Never give your passcodes. Never.
All of your money is gone. And the banks consistently refuse to pay out any kind of compensation to this because they say it's authorised, i.e. you are the person who has made that transaction possible, because the digital payment system makes it possible to move large
amounts of money. So you don't get your money back.
In the blink of an eye, hardly anyone has ever got their money back. And we're talking like hundreds of millions of pounds a year.
Gosh.
The average amount lost is like over £10,000. So lots of people think there could be, you know, how do they know the right people to target? Is there kind of, does the fraud go deeper into the bank network because they're getting tip-offs on who may or may not have lots of money resting in their account? The evidence on that is fairly inconclusive. But what there is a lot of evidence of is that the banks need to do so much more to protect us when we think a fraud is happening.
Of all the banks out there, where should we be?
That is a very good question, because obviously I don't bank with every single bank. So I
bet you've got your money in a pair of tights under your bed.
All of my £8,000.
I thought this was Ken Dodd in his attic again for a second.
I currently bank with 4 different banks, and I would have to say personally, and not as any kind of FT endorsement, that I think that Barclays are absolutely brilliant. They get in touch all the time and say, is this transaction right or wrong? Should we be doing something about it? Their digital services. I mean, like, I paid in a check on the Barclays app the other day from my kitchen. I didn't have to go to the branch. You can now
have you
do
got
this.
One of those machines in the corner with a big lever.
In the corner.
Yeah, next to the rubbish chute in my flat. Yes, this is a new thing that their app does. You just have to... the only faff is that you have to line up the kind of axes around the side of the check. And because I'm not very good with IT, it took me about 4 minutes.
I love that we think 4 minutes is a long time.
Yeah, but damn it.
Four minutes! The cheek of it!
If I'd had to break it down to the Mare Street branch of Barclays in Hackney, where I live, and either queue up for the counter service, which, you know, I'd still be there now, or use the iPad-y sort of machine in branch, which I frequently have disagreements with. It's definitely quicker.
As a homeowner, my partner and I are petrified that after Brexit, what's going to happen with interest rates? Are they going to go up? They've been so low for ages. We're self-employed, so we've had our mortgages being quite low. If they really went up, we'd be totally screwed. Are they going to go up? What's going to happen?
Okay, I think that the forward-looking data that we can see from financial markets indicates that analysts are not expecting interest rates to go up at all this year. Because of all of the nonsense over Brexit, it's just too risky for the Bank of England, our central bank, to start cranking rates up. The base rate is currently 0.75%. It was around 0.5 for most of the financial crisis, which was great. Then it went down to 0.25 when the referendum result came up, and they've, you know, cranked it up a bit since then. And I could see why you'd be worried about them cranking it up more very rapidly, because the yes. Bank of England puts out these kind of like disaster warnings on a frequent basis about no deal. People call it Remain scaremongering.
Project fear.
Yeah. Exactly. That was the word I was looking
for. So should we fix a mortgage for 5 years?
Well, this is the interesting question. So at the moment, property prices haven't collapsed in London by any means.
They've gone down, though.
They've certainly gone down, but the stuff that's gone down is mostly like to the west of the capital, you know, the investment kind of properties that the wealthy oligarchs and so on and so forth are buying, or the sort of glass and steel towers that surround Old Street in the podcast studio where real people haven't been buying those flats to live in. You know, investors have been buying them, and that's the kind of like the first part of the market to thaw over. So yes, prices have been going down, but they haven't collapsed. So if you're thinking about remortgaging, lots of other people in your situation are too. Guess why? Because interest rates are still low. So you can actually lock into quite a long-term deal.
So you would advise that?
I would say it depends on your circumstances, but more and more people are going for a 5-year fix at the moment rather than a 2-year fix, because the prices, in terms of like the interest rates that you'll pay and the arrangement fee, are really broadly quite similar. Also, 7-year fixes, that didn't used to be a thing. Ooh, that is now a thing. And even 10-year fixes are now possible. They used to be quite a rare and specialist product.
That's putting quite a lot of pressure on your marriage, though, isn't it?
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's seven years, you're going to
hit it. It's a long time.
I think we could just about defy safely.
There is a big red flashing warning light with any of these things, because if you want to move in that time, and yes, divorce could be, you know, you could have a baby and need an extra bedroom. You know, you might decide that you want to move to another country because Brexit has gone horribly wrong. And if you end the mortgage, you know, by selling your house, then you have to pay often quite a huge amount to the mortgage lender for breaking that agreement to repay them the money over all of those years. It could be like 5% of your property value if you do it pretty early into the fix. So you need to read all the small print.
Do either of you want to jump in with a final question, Gareth?
It's related to what we were saying earlier. How much money are banks making out of normal people like me? Like, am I a loss leader for them? Or what's the deal?
Okay, I'm going to ask you one question. How often do you go overdrawn?
Very rarely. Very rarely.
Well, I would say then you are likely to be getting the better end of the deal, because it's overdrafts in terms of the retail banking, the high street banking model,
right,
that are making them a lot of their
profits. So they're sitting there waiting for me to make a mistake.
I think all financial services companies are sitting there waiting for you to make a mistake. Indeed, are kind of designed to profit from inertia.
I'm starting to think they're not on our side.
Yeah, this feels
they're
like...
They're not. They are not. They are, you know, they are businesses that are run to provide a service, yes, but they are profit-driven. And if you don't watch your P's and Q's with financial services companies, then, you know, they'll take the whole alphabet. Because credit cards especially, if you only pay the minimum amount on your credit card, it could take you decades to pay off that debt. And if they're charging you 20% interest, it's a hugely profitable business. But then the bank that you're with, do they regularly kind of like send you stuff through the post saying, have a loan, have a credit card? Yeah, because they can see, well, he doesn't go overdrawn much. He's quite good.
Yeah.
He's quite good with his money. He'd be quite good at creating a regular payment stream, which we can then use to fund our future activities. So Gareth is the kind of person that we would like to say yes to and get him on the hook for, you know, £20,000 to build a home extension.
He's not an idiot. Let's see if we can suck him into being an idiot.
Yes.
And that's how they can make money out of you. I get sent letters all the time saying, we've pre-approved a £25,000 loan, and it really annoys me.
With all this in mind, should we just take all our money out and put it in a pair of tights and put it under the bed? Like my nan did, and she never spent anything. And she had her money under her bed in a pair of tights.
Financial genius.
If you've got enough money to stuff into a pair of tights.
It was only one leg.
Oh, okay.
One leg was stuffed.
It doesn't stop.
The other was waiting, you know.
Well, end on a boring but sensible point. You know, if you've got more money than you know what to do with, and you've got, you know, much more money than, say, 3 months' worth of salary sitting in a savings account, and you really need to think about investment, because inflation is going to erode the value of your savings over time. At the moment, there are hardly any savings accounts in the UK that will pay a higher interest rate than inflation, the cash burn, if you like. So the value of money in savings accounts is slowly going downhill. But if you were to invest in the stock market, which is what I write a lot about in the FT
Isn't
UK
that
newspaper,
higher risk, though?
It is higher risk, but over long periods of time, it's proven time and time again to give a better result for the end user. Now, what we were saying earlier about the amount of charlatans in the, you know, financial services space, absolutely, you know, investment is no exception to this. You should be very careful, especially if you're getting cold calls and people coming up with crazy schemes. Cryptocurrency, I think that that's a load of rubbish for what it's worth. But, you know, putting money into a pension that's linked to the stock market, small amounts of money over a very long period of time, that is how most people are going to get rich and fund their retirement. It's not going to happen overnight. It's something that you ideally need to start when you're young. But it's like they say, there's no better time to plant a tree than 50 years ago or today.
Oh. On that bombshell, that's it for this week. Thank you so much to Claire Barrett, to Gareth Gwynne and to Olivia Lee. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at AnyStupidQs. I'm Carrie Quinlan. The producer was Ed Morrish.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.